Some Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back about 5 minutes into hour two, weekend preview at the races. But as much as we're previewing, we're also reviewing. And a week ago, we were, of course, at the cusp of Breeders' Cup 2020. And two good days of racing, a lot of interesting results. Jay Privman took it all in. Jay, good morning.
Steve, how are you?
Excellent. Still basking in the Breeders' Cup afterglow.
Well, it looks good on you. That Breeders' Cup afterglow.
It makes me think of the Groundhog Day line. You know, basking in there, heart of hearts. tiny little Hamlet. the only thing that would have made it better would have been you being there.
Very kind of you, but I was very, even though it was the first one I missed, I was comfortable where I was.
No, I'm anxious to hear if it did provide for the opportunity to do some board watch. And I've talked to you a few times this week, at least on the texting side, and haven't heard about how you bet for the day. So we'll get that in there too. But let's start with your races, Jay. And I'd rather start with the classic and work back from there because it's like the Rose Bowl. It's the granddaddy of them all.
Well, yeah, and then this year was like the Super Bowl because it was a title deciding race. And, you know, Authentic won and he won his best. And as I wrote in my, I did a follow up story where I kind of went through where all the divisions are now after, after the Breeders' Cup. And, one of the nice things about the Breeders' Cup is it really does settle a lot of these awards on the track, which is what you want it to do. And, we all knew going into the race that the two best three-year-olds in the country were in the Classic and the three best older horses in the country were in the Classic, and Authentic won, so he gets it. I mean, he gets the three-year-old title. He gets Horse of the Year. And, Improbable, who finished second and beat his two main rivals, had a better body of work overall going into the race anyway, and then beat both Maximum Security and Tom's Tot, or finished in front of them, I guess is a more accurate way of putting it. But regardless, he'll be the... or should be the champion older horse. So you decided two divisional titles and Horse of the Year all in the space of, 159.18 or 159.60 or pick a number.
Spin the wheel. Make a deal. I haven't checked back with Andy Beyer on the final analysis, but I think the number actually matched what they came up with was close to what Andy worked with, which ended up being...
Andy went off, as I wrote in my story, Andy went off of the track this time, which, for reasons that elude me, was left out of the press release the other day, because it was obviously there was a timing malfunction, and... we knew that going, 17 seconds into the race, that there was a timing malfunction when the opening quote-unquote quarter was posted. There's just a lot of questions about what went on there, but I don't know if you want to get into that. But, that first number that went up was reflective of what you would think a first 3/16 would be. It was almost as though the timer got tripped at the finish line, which would have been 3/16 of a mile into the race. And that's not been something that I've seen addressed yet. And that, to me, looks like the most logical thing of what happened. What was put out the other day, that it was tripped early, makes no sense, because if it was tripped early, the opening quarter would have been, 28 or something like that. Something that is reflective of a timer being tripped before the gate opened. That's not what 17 is. So... They still haven't come clean in my mind as to what actually happened.
The easy element is, you know, it's a distance that's not typically run there, and blah blah. I mean, I haven't seen anything either. Now that you mention it, I hadn't even thought about it. That issue aside, Jay, there's some thoughts about the way this thing unfolded. I mean, given what looked to be enough horses interested in the front end to make a horse like Authentic work a little harder, he entered the backstretch, and I just rolled my eyes. I said he's gonna wire this field. I was shocked at the way that it came off so easily.
Yeah, I guess you saw the race differently than I did in terms of the early pace. I mean, I figured he was going to make the lead, and it was going to be one where he was not going to have to go crazy fast, because the most logical horse to press him was Maximum Security. He's just not as fast as him, and was drawn outside of him, and just figured to try and get a tracking trip. So, you know, and he's from the same barn. So I it was hard for me to see that being a contested pace between those two. I thought it would be an honest pace, but I figured Authentic's in front with Maximum Security stalking him, and then we'll see who's best, and if any of the, you know, Improbable I figured would lay closer, because I didn't think the pace was going to be as contested as it was in the Awesome Again when he lagged back and blasted home. So, I don't know. It didn't unfold in a surprising manner to me.
Interesting. All right. I kind of thought Global Campaign would try to at least engage. And then there's the whole matter of Tis the Law and you know, who was working fast leading in and then wasn't employed in a manner that was going to be to his best advantage to contend.
Well, okay, so we'll go with those two horses you mentioned. So regarding Global Campaign, you know, I thought he would be closer than he was, but he's just not. I mean, you know, he's a horse who can be on the lead, but not in a race where there's faster horses than him. And yeah. I thought he'd be more of a pace prompter than he turned out to be, but he's not a horse who's going to be able to go with Authentic. He's just not that fast. He's a horse who is forwardly placed, but he's not fast like Authentic is. You know, as for Tis the Law, we've written since early in the year, you know, he doesn't want to be inside. And his fate was cast on Monday, you know, when they drew the race. That was a bad draw for him. And, you know, obviously Manny Franco did a terrible job at the draw by selecting that post. Here we are all these, you know, weeks and months down the line from where he was ridden with the intent of getting outside, and he obviously still needed to get outside, and he couldn't early on in that race. I mean, if he'd have sent him away, just busted him out of there, he's not going to outrun Authentic. He's going to end up inside Authentic. And he was in a spot where you could see he wanted to get out early, he couldn't, and then he was just stuck. And, you know, that's an issue that arises when you have a horse who has to be ridden in a certain way and doesn't get the kind of draw that he did in the Derby or in the Belmont. You know, he got the kind of draw that he did in the Holy Bull or the Florida Derby, and he wasn't running against Chivalry. You know, he was running against Authentic. And that's the difference. He has still not, apparently, been able to run inside horses and be as effective as he is when he gets this kind of first over trip that he obviously prefers. And so he just ended up in a bad spot. And, you know, the most shocking thing for me, Steve, about the way that race was that horse was favored. I didn't see coming. It was obviously a very good horse, but, you know, where he was drawn, and, you know, with the quality of older horses in the race,
right?
I was stunned. Tis the Law was favored over, improbable. Let's just start there. Really, really surprised me.
No, well put. I haven't even had that that part of the discussion really all week about where those chips ended up falling. Some other thoughts through the chart. I thought Improbable made a game run. Higher Power. I expected a much more virulent attempt in his career finale. Tom's Detat. What else went on down that chart?
Well, I mean, Improbable ran well. I mean, he ran a good race. You know, Maximum Security surprised me. He had trained well, and I thought he'd run a better race than that. Not necessarily that he'd win, but I thought he would be more of a factor than he was. He to me was one of the most disappointing horses in the race. As was Tom's Detat, who never really picked up his feet. Higher Power hadn't run a good race in a long time, in my estimation. So I didn't expect him to finish last, but he was not a horse I expected to suddenly bounce back, especially against a field of that quality, based on what he'd done in his races in 2020.
The subsequent news pieces, of course, a hatful of them, going on to second careers at their assorted farms, and some of the some others. I obviously, Tis the Law with the pronouncement yesterday of the Pegasus as the start of his 4-year-old season. The most apparent of the those exiting the classic.
Right. Well, I mean, of those exiting who are gonna continue to race. I mean, we know that if Authentic's off to stud, Improbable's off to stud, Maximum Security's off to stud, Global Campaign's off to stud, so is Tom's Detat, so is Higher Power. Tis the Law stays in training. By my standards for now, is staying in training. I hope he stays in training. He's a really good horse. He wasn't up to that the other day. But there's been a lot of cream from the top of that older horse division gone to stud, and there's a pretty wide lane for somebody who stays in training who's a good horse, like By My Standards is, to do some good next year. Looks like Nick's Goal is they haven't decided what they're going to do with him, but at the least you would think a horse like that would go to the Pegasus. He won the Dirt Mile plus 70 that they run there. So, and he's won going a mile and a 16th. So, at a speed favoring track, I think he could handle a mile and an eighth. So he's to me an interesting possibility for that. They haven't said that yet. I just think he'd be a good possibility for that kind of a race. And we'll see how Tis the Law bounces back. He'll have a new jockey. I mean, one thing we learned yesterday, Steve, we know, those school buses, nobody knew what had happened to them for all these years, but we now know what they're used for, backed right up over Manny Franco. So, if you want to make a rider change, that's perfectly within your right, but, there's a classy way to do it, and then there's the way it was handled. And, Manny Franco rode that horse impeccably in the Holy Bull and the Florida Derby when he needed to get outside, and he got him outside. And he rode him perfectly in the Belmont and in the Travers. And he gave him a great ride in the Derby. He was just second best on the day. And then he got a bad post, and he got beat. And, okay, so let's blame the jockey for that. Fine. You want to make a change, John Velasquez is open, Johnny's a Hall of Fame rider, that's fine. On the way out, though, before you back the bus over him, at least praise him for getting you to the point that you got him to, instead of just dumping on him for his ride in the Classic, which, by my mind, is not completely his fault, because the post hurt him, and the horse still can't compete in that kind of a situation. So, at least praise the guy for what he did on the horse before. And then if you want to knock him for that ride, which I don't think is completely fair, fine, but have some balance. But the way it was handled was awful in my mind and really classless.
I completely agree. It wasn't even necessary to, you know, to have a regal heralding of this. You could get into January and name Johnny. So be it. I don't know what the, you know, laying it at his feet, a fairly unnecessary. Meanwhile, let's stick with your races too. The Dirt Mile, and you mentioned Nixco, and it felt like there were two horses to seriously consider in there, the winner and Complexity, and maybe Complexity, you know, the distance issue, the one turn versus the two turn comes into play a little. Some thoughts about Nixco.
Well, you know, he was the horse I pulled with, the horse I liked most the whole weekend. I just thought the race really came up good for him. He was obviously, he's very fond of Keeneland. He was coming off a track record performance going a mile and a 16th. He had trained great since. And, you know, the race, I thought, came up well for him. His main rival was a horse who was a question in a two-turn mile race. And those are different races than one-turn miles, like the Kelso. And, you know, Complexity ran a decent enough race, but that's just not what he wants to do. You know, and Nixco wants to do that, and was at his home track. So it really set up well for him. The thing you were asking me at the top about how the gambling went for me, I mean, that race was the difference between my winning and losing, because I had a giant exacta over Sharp Samurai, and that photo with Jesus' team beating him was the difference between me having a winning weekend and a losing weekend. It was that. Hmm. Not to mention the next race when I had a all-by-single-by-single pick three ending with Rushing Fall. So I had, back-to-back torture on Saturday's card in those two races, and those were two instances that were the difference between winning and losing. So I mean, it was fun. I won money Friday. I lost more than I won Friday. I lost on Saturday, but it's great gambling, and I felt like I was in with a chance, and had some good opinions, had some awful opinions as well. But that's kind of what'll happen in the case of a 14 race situation like that.
You know, you mentioned Jesus' team getting up with the nose over Sharp Samurai, and they both, you know, they both ran very well. One of the really fun underreported stories of the season, actually, not just the Breeders' Cup, is Jose D'Angelo and the job he's done with this horse, with Jesus' team. He got a 102 buyer, a career best, and coming off the Preakness placement, the Jim Dandy placement, I mean, he's really had a nice season, this horse. Hit the board in 7 of 9 starts, and he looms, a nice addition to the older horse crowd next year.
Very much so. I think he might be distance limited. You know, I think maybe, you know, a mile to a mile and eighth is kind of where he wants to be. And he's a Pegasus type of horse. He's based down there. So he should run there. And yes, he's done a great job with that horse. I wrote a little something about that horse back in like September when he decided not to go to the Derby. But you're right, he deserves a little more attention than he's gotten. There's so much focus on the winners or the marquee names that get beat that a horse like that kind of falls through the cracks. But he did a great job with them all year, and third in the Preakness and second in the, unfortunately not third in the Dirt Mile. I mean, he had great progress during the course of the year from where he was back in February and March.
Four, if you say super, I was going to say one of the longest shots on the board scenarios. There were three that were in the try, and if you count Lady Prance-a-Lot, fourth in the filly and mare as the longest shot on the board, and came within a length of being third. I know Richie Baltus was It was thrilled. I immediately afterward, I said, she ran great. And he said, she ran her ass off. That was all right, Lady Prancelot.
No, she ran a lot better than I would have thought. The biggest, longest shot on the board surprise was obviously Order of Australia. Did not see that coming. But that's one of the fun things about gambling on the Breeders' Cup is because you get generally, square prices on whoever you like. And that's one of the fun parts about it. And when you're playing gimmicks, if you have a right opinion, because the fields are so big and the money is, the races are so competitive that you can get nice returns on gimmicks because of the field sizes. So there's just a lot to like about gambling on that weekend's racing.
Jay, speaking of which, and since we will turn our attention pretty darn quickly to the Derby Trail and 2021 in pretty short order, an essential quality I want to talk about. But what about, speaking of long shots on the board, what about Hot Rod Charlie's placement behind him in the Juvenile on Friday?
Yeah, I mean, I can't have that off what he had done to that point, but obviously he made significant progress from his fourth time out maiden win to the Juvenile. It was a big effort on his part. I mean, there was a point turning into the lane where I thought he was winning.
Yeah.
Then he ran very, very well, and obviously he's a nice horse to have out here in California to be following as we turn from 2 to 3, because he certainly made a big move forward. I mean, he was cut out to be a good horse. I mentioned him in my pre-summer Delmar meet, 2-year-olds to watch story. He's a half brother to Matoli. He's cut out to be a nice horse. He just didn't show a lot his first 2-3 starts, and then he won a maiden race in average time. But he certainly took a big step forward from the maiden win to that start.
And while we're talking West Coast 3-year-olds, Rombauer ran better than people might have noticed.
Well, he ran a decent race. He needs to keep making some progress. He's a cut below the division's best right now, but he'll be certainly one of the better ones out here over the winter. But there's a lot of good ones in the pipeline coming. So
fair.
We'll see if as with all of these horses, you just want to see what kind of progress they make from 2 to 3, because there's some other ones that are coming down the pike pretty quick.
Some thoughts about the main track 2-year-old winners, both VQuist and Essential Quality?
Well, I mean, Essential Quality, obviously, similar to Nick's Go, over a track that he obviously likes, and the experience at 2 turns. To me, that race was, the Juvenile and the Dirt Mile had a lot of similarities in terms of a favorite trying to go 2 turns for the first time, a horse who had the home court advantage. Both of those things were true of both those races, and were significant factors, I think, in the results of both those races. Jackie's Warrior ran a tremendous race. The pace of that race was blazing hot. That said, I just don't know that going out to a 2-turn mile and a 16th mile and an 8th kind of races next year is going to be in his favor as compared to 1-turn races. I do think he can get 2 turns. He won the Champagne 2 impressively, to think that he can't go at least a middle distance. But I don't know that he's going to be best suited as some others in this crop to when you start going out to the Derby distances and things like that. But the race came up real tough for him the other day, I thought. And as for VQuist, I mean, the great thing about that race was that you had every top ranked 2-year-old filly in the country in there. Every one that you would think would be have a legitimate shot at the divisional title, and she won. And that race, clearly decided the Eclipse Award in that division. There's nobody else you could possibly vote for, based on not only her having 2 Grade 1 wins, but winning the race that everybody else was in that mattered.
Yeah, getting Butch Reed, Butch had won a marathon, but getting him a main a main Breeders' Cup race. It was really one of the highlights. And we haven't even talked sprint, Jay. If you want to kind of do a compendium of you know, the rest of the weekend, Ron Moquette and the job he's done keeping Whitmore healthy, happy, competitive. Obviously the parallels, you know, were immediately apparent to Kona Gold and you know, his odyssey to his Breeders' Cup sprint win.
Right, yeah. I think Kona Gold did it in his third try of five, and Whitmore did it in his fourth try. It's just great to see horses like that who stick around and perform at a high level like that. So see them rewarded for that. I didn't see it coming for him. I was a little disappointed in his previous race, but he's such a cool horse, and he'd run well earlier in the year. He'd run some terrific races at Oaklawn. He ran a really good race behind Volatile in the Vanderbilt. He had it in him, obviously. I just thought his last race or two, you know, he had a legitimate excuse in the Forego. That was just a, you know, as you know better than anybody, it was just treacherous conditions that day. But I just thought he'd run a little bit better in the Phoenix, and so I kind of got off of him. But it was neat to see. I mean, McQuest done a great job with him. He's a cool horse. And I don't know if, you know, if the crowd noise drowned out Kurt Becker's call on track there, but, you know, the joy in his voice as he called that horse hitting the front and coming to the wire was one of the just real race call highlights of the weekend. He was just, you could just tell he was excited for the horse, for the people, and for what was unfolding in front of his eyes. Was if this horse was going to the lead, and nobody was going to catch him. And his call of that race is really one of the, you know, really cool calls of the year.
There's always moments, and you know, we obviously aren't as plugged into it to some degree as the international audience, but of course we should touch on, you know, the success of the invaders of Fanshaw and Ryan and O'Brien and Dermot Weld, Jay, and having covered every single Breeders' Cup, that means you covered every single frustration for Weld over the last three plus decades.
You know, that's true, but he, you know, he hasn't run that many horses over the years.
No,
I mean,
it
was like 13 or something like
13,
that.
13, yes.
It's not like it's 35 or, you know, some, you know, number like that. I mean, he's taken his shots, and he just hadn't gotten lucky before. But it, you know, it certainly was a well deserved win. You know, world class trainer, and that filly was, you know, terrifically prepared for the race, and was best on the day. So, you know, hats off to Dermot Weld for doing that. And you know, speaking of not only Dermot Weld, but, you know, the Aga Khan has supported the Breeders' Cup literally from the beginning.
Yes,
I mean,
he
had horses in the 84 Breeders' Cup, and, you know, he didn't run in the U.S. for a while, and it's nice to see him, you know, back over here and racing here again.
Any other thoughts about Euro hits, the O'Brien trifecta?
Great. Yeah, like I said earlier, I mean, the owner of Australia's win was improbable as all get out to me. I just, his form just didn't look like it even came close to measuring up to the other two Aidan O'Brien runners, let alone, you know, so many of the others in that race. So that to me was the biggest head scratcher of the weekend. It's hard to imagine that Aidan O'Brien could run 1-2-3 in a mile grass race and have a, you know, a trifecta that would pay what that thing paid. It was hard to, I don't know, Order of Australia was tough to come up with for me.
Agreed. We touched on the awards. Most everything got decided. There might be a couple of little areas of uncertainty.
Yeah, I don't. There's not much uncertainty left. I mean, you know, Monomoy Girl obviously is going to be older dirt female, Swiss Skydiver. I mean, she had already wrapped up the 3-year-old filly title even before the Breeders' Cup. Gamine is going to win filly sprinter, I would think. You know, she's won three grade ones around one turn and beat Serengeti Empress in their head-to-head meeting the other day. The Sprinter is still, Whitmore's probably the most logical horse who could get it, but, he did lose his lone start to Volatile, so there might be some support for Volatile. There might even be some support for Vekoma, who won the Carter earlier in the year, and, the Met Mile is not a sprint per se, but it's around one third, and it's a grade one, and it's an important race. But you got to give Whitmore credit for, A, making the race, which Vekoma and Volatile didn't, and for running all year and winning what's supposed to be the championship race. So I think at the end of the day, he'll get it, but I could see other support for Vekoma or Volatile or, even a horse like Nashville, who's supposed to go out here and run in the Malibu.
Right.
Now, if he were to win the Malibu, it's a restricted race, though. It's three-year-olds only, not three and up. But it would give him a grade one win, and he'd have some sort of late-season support. But I don't know that is going to trump what Whitmore has accomplished through the course of the year. And it'll be interesting to see how the female grass title goes. Even Rushing Fall got beat by Adaria. And then you had, as we were talking about, Tarnawa winning the turf against Bales. But, Rushing Fall had a pretty strong body of work coming into that. And I don't know that getting beat by a one-off European is going to prevent her from winning the female grass title this year. The male grass title is going to be a tough one to I think Channel Maker finished third in the turf. He won two grade ones, and that'll carry a lot of weight because there wasn't really a standout in that division. United won four stakes, but they were all grade two, and voters often look at grade ones a lot stronger than, if you win four grade twos, it's not going to be as significant as two grade ones. And he finished behind Channel Maker, albeit with like an excuse. I mean, he took a pretty bad bobble at the quarter pole, lump in your throat kind of bobble, but hopefully, it looks like he emerged from the race okay. And another horse, Steve, who I think has been forgotten but deserves some consideration in that division is Zulu Alpha, who won three graded stakes. He won the Pegasus World Cup turf at the beginning of the year, beating Channel Maker, beat Channel Maker in the Mac D'Armada. So, he's a horse who I think will get some support too, but two late season grade one wins and a third behind, two world-class Europeans is probably going to carry it for Channel Maker, I think, in that division.
Well, Breeders' Cup 2020. Jay, the action now turns toward home game, and a decent weekend looks like ahead, starting today at Del Mar and the Bob Hope, the Grade 3 on Sunday, the Desi Arnaz, or as we call it, the Babaloo.
You can call it the Babaloo. They had Lucy and Ricky.
You got some splaining to do. anything else at Del Mar this weekend? I haven't really dug in. Maiden.
Those are the two, most significant races. They're both kind of Del Mar's prep races for the Starlet and the Futurity at Los Alamitos next month. The race Saturday, they're both sprints for, for two-year-olds. The Desi Arnaz is a six-and-a-half race tomorrow for fillies. Private Mission will be favored in there. She won her lone start for Baffert in the Mischief Filly. In the Mischief, I think he might make it as a stallion. In the Mischief Filly, who, won, well-regarded, won nicely first time out. Mandela's got a filly in there that he really likes named Astute, who won her first start. It was on grass, but that was just because that's what came up that week when she was ready to run, and so he put her in there, and she won anyway. She'll be just fine on dirt. She trained great before her first race. She's been well-regarded for a long time, so those are two to follow in there. And then Sunday is the Bob Hope, and that's a 7/8 race for males. You've got Spielberg wheeling back pretty quickly. I mean, he just ran 2 weeks ago when he won a maiden race at Del Mar. And then you've got Weston, who hasn't run since finishing third in the Del Mar Futurity behind Dr. Scheibel and Spielberg. So he gets back into action. So those are a couple of the ones to watch there. I think it's an okay group on Sunday, but there's nobody here who I think is a real killer. I mean, they're nice. There's some nice horses in here, but I don't know that these are going to be ones that we're going to be talking about as the top, classic prospects come February and March.
I probably told Hammer because it's come up before with the Bob Hope. I saw Bob Hope live when I was at Colgate. Bob Hope taped a series of specials, Jay, at I think six colleges, and then it was like a CBS special or whatever. I think CBS, and it was Bob Hope on Campus was the name of the special, and it just so happened it was Parents Weekend, so my parents and I went and I got to see Bob Hope on stage, which I. As I think about it now, I kind of relish. I saw Sinatra twice too on stage.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought so. I got to hear him sing "Thanks for the Memories" and the whole bit.
That's very, very cool.
Right. All right. There we go. Babalu. I did not get to see Desi. But this is why we love the Bing Crosby season at Del Mar.
It's Del Mar Light. Actually, it's been Del Mar Light, unfortunately, summer and fall. But because unfortunately, we still can't have fans here.
Yeah, it's true.
It's a necessity, unfortunately. At least we're racing. But
exactly.
But no, the fall meet is fun, and it really gets going towards the end with that great final week with all the grass races, including the Derby and the Matriarch. So that'll be a fun week.
Jay, I appreciate it. Great work. And as I said to Marty, the staff that was either on track with Marty and Nicole and Mike Welch, and then everybody working remotely, the coverage was fabulous. So well done.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I was proud of what everybody did. I thought we had a good week.
No doubt about it. Every week is good week for America's Turf Authority since
Marty McGee came on board.
1894.
We were lost in the desert before then.
DRF Ribbon, everybody. Jay, have a great weekend.
All right, you too, Steve. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. So much fun. We'll stay right here because standing by, speaking of Hammer, here he is, Rick Hammerly. Good morning.
Good morning to you. How's everything going?
Well, good. You, listen, forget me. What about you? What about your tremendous betting companion analysis? You had kind of a free-form approach, and boy, you delivered. You delivered the big double, and you delivered a Daria to everybody, and it was the biggest hits of the betting companion. Congratulations. Well done.
Well, thank you. All I can say is please give me more races next year. I say that. I say that because, I enjoyed doing that stuff, and I had done the PTF, Peter Fornatale, had asked me to do the Philly Mare Turf for a podcast for him, so I had studied that thing back and forth, and then you said, go do it, and then you gave me the mile. So, I mean, I spent hours on those races, writing up. And boy, when you do spend the time.
Case, we lose. Did you lose Hammer? Is that? No? Yeah. Phone's connected, but he's muted. Did he mute himself, you think? Yeah, I think he muted himself. Do you ever do that with the when your face touches the phone somehow and it hits the little mute circle? I did that the other day with Andy, actually. And he said to me, can you hear, hello, hello, hello? And then I looked at the phone. I saw that I had muted myself accidentally. Fat cheek. For those that didn't participate, let me, as Casey pulls him back, what Hammer did was, because it just so happened the two races that he got, the Dirt Mile and the Philly and Mare Turf, were back-to-back. So he did the Dirt Mile analysis and, you know, obviously started with Nick's Go, but he took essentially a 5x4 double. So Art Collector, Sharp Samurai, Nick's Go, Owen Dale, and Complexity, a 5x4 with Adaria, Rushing Fall, Civil Union, and Peaceful. That was a terrific approach, and it brought back $207, and then into Adaria, who he really keyed on. And with Adaria, he had a $20 win punch, and the Exacta box with Adaria, Cayenne Pepper, who really did change the race, and etc. Civil Union, Rushing Fall, Peaceful, and Sister Charlie. And that brought back a...
Are we back?
Yeah, there you go. Brought back 99.60, and the win punch brought back $376. So the $200 suggestions that Hammer offered ended up bringing back essentially what the 376, 476, 676, 683, $683 for Hammer's $200 in bets. Well done. Tripled your money.
All right, very good. Actually, you shortchanged on the double. The double paid 41 for a buck, so $10 double was 400 something.
Oh wow! Wow, good job. I
believe me, I know that.
Because you said you bet everything that you laid out. No, we didn't lose him again, did we, Case? Seriously? I've never had this trouble with him, with his phone. That's nuts. All right, try him again. That's something going on with his. 40. Oh, he's right. I absolutely doubled that, 400. So $800. So instead of our guide bringing back 1,800, it brought back 2,000. Great job. All right. Try again, Case. No, I know it's his phone. Absolutely. It's crazy. He's going to call. Okay, he's going to call Case back from a different phone. Well, now I'm even more proud of what everybody did. Because the 1,400 in wagers looked like I thought it had brought back 1,800. It brought back 2,000. Superb. Good work. All right, we'll get Hammer back here and let him further riff. There he is. All right,
we tried the other phone.
And this sounds good too. That was weird. I don't think that's happened in 15 years. I don't think that's happened
once.
Yeah.
Never. So, well, things happen.
That's
so
right.
Perseverance. I was just talking about this. So how we talk about, you know, keep swinging, because it does, you know, you just have to hit a couple races. I mean, Friday was horrible. It's the first Breeders' Cup that I've spent by myself, so to speak. I'm at home. I was going
sure.
nuts. Friday, I actually said, I'm out of here. I drove to the beach. I said, get me out of here. And it wasn't even a beach day, but I had to get out of the house, so I watched the races down there, bet from down there, and had a horror. Didn't get a sniff on Friday. And, you know, came back and redid my stuff on Saturday and started at 7:15 out here, the first race. So, you know, get up, get ready. And, you know, first race was in Nashville. I passed on that and sniffed around a couple of other races. Nothing. Couldn't catch a pick three. Couldn't put three races together. Couldn't put two races together. And came to the mile, and I said, you know what? I better bet what I said, and actually doubled up a little bit more on Nick's go after watching some of the other races, figuring if he's gone, he's gone. So that came along, and then you know, the Doria race comes, and it's like, you know, I kept singing that Frankie Valli song, My Eyes of Doria, which I was kidding around about. That's how I remembered how to pronounce the horse's name. And so I put the song on. And I tried to, maybe that's what happened. I tried to cue it up for the intro today, so maybe that screwed it up. But so I put on My Eyes of Doria, and my wife, you know, Gina's going, you're crazy. And I said, well, we've already determined that. And I'm sitting there, and I bet, I made a nice bet, and I thought to myself, like 5 minutes to post, I go, this horse is going to win. This horse is going to win. So I'm back and like doubled up. And I swear the horse was 11-1 when I bet. And then when they crossed the wire and she paid $37, I was just like, you got to be kidding me. And I had forgotten about the nice double. So I hit the exacta. And then, you know, was feeling pretty good and made a nice win bet in Turnawa. And that was it. I didn't have one pick three. I probably paid 10 of them. Didn't have a pick four, didn't have a pick five, but hit three races and walked away having a pretty darn good Breeders' Cup. So it really was, like I said, you just got to have faith and you got to keep going. So had fun doing your deal. And like I said, I kept thinking, well, maybe if I spend an hour on each race, maybe I'd do better. But seriously, it did help me get into it. And one thing I learned the last couple of years, and for everybody, and because when you get done with the day, you always think back, well, I wish I would have done this. Make notes now about how you would have played some of these races,
yeah,
because you're going to forget come next Breeders' Cup. So I wrote myself, you know, and I didn't find the note till for the two-year-old turf races, just bet every prep winner. I mean, forget about all the goofy stuff. You know, here you got with Mike Makersource wins the prep and pays, you know, astronomical. And it's just a simple blind, you know, horse to include just because of that. So if you have some notes about how you should have played certain races that you think of now, write it down now, tuck it away somewhere, and because, you know, you play these days different than you do normal days, and you know, like always play Baffert in the Classic, and oh, by the way, always play the outside horse in the mile race too. Once again, I know we talk about it every year after year,
yeah,
but
yeah,
you know, it just,
yeah,
happens. I mean,
it's amazing,
and not necessarily the outside, but those outside in that big turf race on Friday. Same thing happened. The 16 horse drew in and wins off. So, you know, sometimes I'll start handicapping from the outside in on those races. So I think about those horses and don't forget about them. But you know, just a great day. Congratulations, you know, go out to everybody. You've talked about all the owners, especially, and the breeders and the trainers, the jocks. And of course, the players for stepping up. I mean, I think the betting was tremendous, you know, compared to some of the off days that we've had and some of the bigger events. So, you know, it really came together. It was like I said, it was like a miracle Breeders' Cup, and Keeneland did a great job getting that done. And so, congratulations. You know, it was great to see Mike Maker in there and Butch Reed with all the regulars. I mean, Brad Cox, what a tremendous day for him. And Ron Moquette, you said it best earlier in the week. You said, when that horse was coming down to the stretch, whether you had him or not, you had to have a smile on your face. And I swear that was me. You look up and you go, who's that? Whitmore? Darn, I didn't use him. But you know what? Great. Good for Whitmore. So,
yep.
Just a feel-good win. And, I mean, what a war horse. And should be compared to a horse like Kona Gold. You know, a warrior-type horse comes back for his fourth Breeders' Cup and wins it, and you know, he's such a good guy, Ronnie, and you know, maybe we'll see the horse again come Oakland.
He's in a King Cotton. He said on Monday, King Cotton is the goal.
There you go. And you know, speaking of Oakland, guess what? Two weeks and a day, the gates will open, and we'll have horses coming, you know, coming in and getting ready for the meet. The stall situation is done. The applications were in about a week ago, and luckily for me, Pat Pope does most of the heavy lifting on that, and review those probably early next week. and you'll see some new faces and some of the similar ones that were there last year, and don't like to talk about names yet until it's official, but really looking forward to another strong meet as it was last year. So purses are up, and you know, the feeling's up. And like I said, we talked about Oklahoma being one of the tracks that was the pioneer of carrying through and making it through the COVID situation early. I think was an inspiration to a lot of the other tracks that followed suit. But you know, I'm starting to count down here. I'm ready to get on the road and head out there. I'm looking forward to doing another season out there. But all good. Congratulations again to Jonathan Kinchin, of course, the runner-up, and of course, Marshall Graham, the winner of the BCBC. You know, we were kidding him, talking, and along with Pat Cummings, who actually sent me a deal that he had a good Breeders' Cup day, and I said, boy, we had a pretty good panel there at Arizona last year. It was myself and Jonathan and Marshall and Pat talking about some player concerns, but... pretty good bunch to get together, and you know, as you know, just great guys, and it's kind of neat when people you know do that well and follow through. But you know, I stop back and think, and when you had Marshall on, did you have Marshall on earlier in the week for an hour, right? Who's reviewing his stuff? Think about this: what bets did he concentrate on? Monomoy Girl, you know, an even money horse. The exact at the end was, you know, not terribly, you know, wasn't exotic or, you know, 50-to-1 shots coming in. And as you say, every Breeders' Cup, you don't need the 50-to-1 shots to have a good day. And, you know, these guys just put it together. And, of course, they've got, you know, to make that kind of a bet with your own money takes some huevos. And they do obviously have that. But, you know, you don't have to get complicated if you just take it simple and do the right thing. It's pretty wild. But congratulations to them. And you talked to Jay. I turned Jay off at the end because I didn't hear what he had to say about Del Mar, but it's coming up. Continuing on kind of quietly, as he says, what did he say, Del Mar 2?
Del Mar Light, yeah.
But Del Mar Light, where, like I said, great time to visit. Unfortunately, they're not taking fans, so unless you have the old owner's badge. But I hear they're making fake ones on the corner for $10 to get you in. You can get down there and get in. You know, check that out. And I wanted, before we go, I know you've got a lot of stuff. I wanted to mention, and I don't know if you mentioned it earlier in the week or last week, about the passing of a good friend from the East Coast, Dr. Pete Hall. Did you talk about Pete?
No. No.
I saw it on Indian Charlie, and I said, you know what, I would just want to bring him. He's a vet that I met in New Jersey, and just a fantastic vet, fantastic guy, and up and down the coast. You know, and anybody would come to town, and they would, you know, who do I need? Doc Hall, down in Florida as well, and just a good man. His son, Timmy Hall, used to train. I don't know, I haven't talked to Timmy in a while, but... A good man, and I have a good story about him that is pretty good, and it's the first thing that I think of when I think of him, and it's kind of quick, but I got to tell you the story. So
go ahead.
We're at Monmouth, and it's Haskell time, and they have a golf tournament, just like a lot of tracks do. Typical golf tournament. You get, you know, foursomes together and go to a golf club, and you know you play, and then you go to banquet afterwards and, you know, have a few pops and a few laughs and whatever. So we're playing in the tournament. I think it's me and Danny Dufford and Henry Carroll and maybe Brian Brennan. We used to play a lot together, so we're with foursome. We have a great time. And we're kind of finishing up, and I think we're headed up 17, and the group across is headed up 18 going the other way. And they had these prizes during the thing, you know, hole-in-one, get some money, closest to the pin, longest drive. And we look over, kind of watching the group over there tee off, and guy tees off, and he shanks one into the lake or whatever. You know, puts down another ball and whacks it and hits it pretty good. And he goes down and happened to be the longest drive hole. And, you know, there's one thing, you get as many balls as you want, but when there's a prize, you don't take your second ball to win the prize. So sure enough, the guy goes down, writes his name on the little thing, and sticks it on the ground and moves on. So we get to the hole, and we're driving. We get down there. We don't come close. I get up to the sign. I look at the guy's name. I never heard of him. But I go, we're thinking to myself, that's not right. So I cross the name off, and I put Mo Howard. Throw the thing down. Tournament ends. We go into the banquet. And we're looking around. We got to, what are we going to do here? So there we see Pete over sitting across the way. Said, Pete, whenever they have the award for the longest drive, they're going to announce this name, Mo Howard. You get up and take the prize. What are you talking about? So just do it. Just whenever you hear longest drive and they announce the winner, get up and go up there. So the banquet, we're moving along, and they get to the longest drive, and we're having a few pops. And we've checked out the table where the guy that thinks he won, there's only like two, there's only two pole players left. I mean, this guy thinks he's got it in the bag, and he's over there, and everyone's, great job. They longest drive, and they hold up this titanium, X5 triple X super long driver for the, for the prize. And then the winner is Mo Howard. And we look around the room, and we're checking out this guy's going, what? Mo Howard? Who's Mo? Half the people didn't even get it. So we're looking over at Pete. He's looking at us, and we're like, Pete, do it. So he gets up, goes up to front, big round of applause, hand him the driver, and goes back to the table. And he goes, what do you want me to do with the drive? I said, yours, just take it. So people are coming over to him congratulating. What a hit, man. We saw you hit that thing. Oh, what a drive. That was great. And he was just sitting there in the limelight with a big crowd around him holding his drive with a big smile on his face. It was classic.
That's great.
You can't make it up. And so every time you see him, you go, thanks for that driver. Thanks for that driver. But anyway. Just a great guy, and every time I see him, and I just think of that story. So anyway, we're gonna end it on a fun note.
Nice, Hammer. I appreciate it. Well, Rick, great job, and we'll start to build up again. And we got, as you mentioned, you got the Turf Festival coming up at the end of November, and Del Mar, and you'll be getting ready for Oakland.
The race. They got the Philly races. They got two races this weekend. But the colt race, interesting, real quick. The Bob Hope. It's a 7-furlong race for 2-year-olds. Kind of like the starting to get to the winter. Let's get these horses cranked up. And Bob Baffert has won this race 10 times, which is incredible. It's probably been run 20 times. He's won it 10 times. But this race is not a star maker. It's pretty wild. I'm going to read two of the 10, you'll know. I'm going to read real quick the 10 horses that he's won this race to, and you're probably going to go, wow. So 96, Inexcessive Bull. 97, Committicize. 98, Premier Property. 2007, Massive Drama. 2011, So Brilliant. 2012, Really Mr. Greeley. 2013, Toes on Ice. Those names don't jump off, make you get out of your seat, do you? Do they? Pretty wild, right? Now, Mastery won it in 2016, and obviously Mastery went on to win a couple races, and then got hurt, but was going to be a real nice horse. He won it in 2018, which with Mucho Gusto, who didn't really do a whole lot as a 3-year-old, and obviously won the big race as an older horse. And then 2019 with High Velocity. So this race is not a star maker historically, so, don't look for any of these horses to be moving on down the road. Spielberg's in there for Bob Baffert, and this just broke his maiden not too long ago, has the best figure and everything else. Weston, kind of the good horse to root for out of the Ryan Hansen barn. But anyway, just want to kind of go over that race, and it's amazing they won so many, but amazing that like I said, too many of these horses went on to be good 3-year-olds. Down the road. So that one, and then the Philly race, the Desi Arnaz is there too, and Bob has three in there. One of them has a very interesting name. I won't go there, but you can figure it out yourself. But Bob is the king of the 2-year-olds here. So anyway, the weather's turning great here. It's a little chilly, and if, like I said, if you do go to want to make a trip to Del Mar, regardless, the race is that that still is a wonderful town, and you know, you get to see some of the sights there without the big crowds. But you're going to be there next year. That's all that matters, Steve.
Yeah, and hopefully everybody else that couldn't come this year will be back. We enjoyed the first go around at Del Mar. It was good. The last Breeders' Cup there. So looking forward to it.
Well, you're going
to
be there for the summer, what I'm talking about. Sunglass season.
Well, I did talk to Tina because of the Vegas situation for NHC. We're going to try to tie, you know, we'll try to tie up a week before maybe. Yeah, that was the
idea. Sounds like you're trying to leave yourself an out. Just put the pencil in for a few days.
All right.
And get it done.
We will. We will. No, she was up for it. She was absolutely. She said, "Sounds great." She, no argument from her.
Tina fit right into the right in. She fit right into that scene. Right
nice.
Into that scene. You, the sports jacket and the tie, not so much. Tina.
Well, this summer, this was a good summer for that, the more relaxed version at Saratoga. So I'll be a little casual. I don't want to be like Seth Merrow and be summer casual, but I will be more casual.
Big
Hammer,
casual.
I appreciate it, and we'll talk next week.
All right, see you later. Bye.
Rick Haverly, everybody. Away they go. Let's take time out. 5 minutes in and back for the final hour. We've got visits coming with Paul Matisse, the last half hour, and Nick Tamaro next. Nick and I'll go after another cross country, waiting for the scratches from Churchill, New York. New York's race is actually pretty much unaffected, the sequence. No harm when it comes to scratches on the races involved today, the 7th, 8th, and 9th. Just one horse, that Manalito came out, the 30-1 shot came out of the 7th. But I'm also giving you a swing at the pick five in New York and the late pick four too, because I looked at races five and six as well. So races five through nine from New York, and when it comes to the pick five cross country, the 6th and 9th from Churchill. Nick Tamaro next. Paul Matisse coming up. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Don't miss a second of thrilling live racing from Aqueduct this fall on America's Day at the Races on Fox Sports. Watch Maggie Wolfendale, Andy Serling, and the entire all-star cast bring you the best of fall racing live from Aqueduct. For full TV listings, visit NYRA.com.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.